You're listening to Strictly Business Podcast with Lindsay Williams.
JSC has closed its doors for another day, so it's time for the 5 o'clock shadow. And as always on a Thursday, I speak to Viv Govender from Rand Swiss in Johannesburg and also David Shapiro from Sasfin Securities. But David Shapiro is temporarily not with us. I'm sure he's going to join the call as we go along. So let's start with you, Viv. And I was going to anyway, because I spoke to David on Monday and I said to him, I put the question to him, what is it going to take for the markets to have a hit because of what's going on in the world? Is it going to have to be a small nuclear device or something like that that is going to spark a sell-off? Because here we are, last night, S&P 500, all-time record highs again. War? What war?
Look, I think a couple things are happening. Firstly, is that we are in the midst of one of those great technological revolutions that seems to be heading, you know, up and away without much of a slowdown. So, I mean, the demand that's coming through for things like, you know, NVIDIA chips and Micron, you know, it goes Memory and, you know, it goes the Bloom Energy and all those kind of things is just, you know, hitting new all-time highs, and that's pushing markets up. Secondly, we had results. I mean, bank results are awesome at the moment. You know, these guys are making a fortune on trading and investment banking, so that's obviously going to help. You know, you're never going to short a stock just because the world looks bad if that stock's giving you a lot of profits, you know what I mean? So that's one thing.
Yeah, just before we do, also, I think just before you go on, I want to get onto the banks because I've got to be in my bonnet about the banks. The banks are doing fantastically well. I mean, some of these numbers are eye-watering. But the banks are not doing the traditional banking as we know it. They are trading. They've got their trading floors, which you quite rightly pointed out, which are making gargantuan amounts of money. And also, I think in that quarter, there were $33 billion worth of share buybacks from banks. So it's not so much a bank as a casino. That is the cynical view, Viv. There must be other stuff going on, you know, funding AI and all that sort of thing. But on the other hand, without the Trump factor, I don't think these banks would be doing so well.
Yeah, look, I mean, firstly, in a large extent, banking is commoditized at the moment. If you think about it, I mean, it's not about a branch manager that knows your name and he can do a deal with you for most people out there. Mm. It's just basically an app that you're using, and that app is pretty much, you know, transferable between like a bunch of different banks. You know, it's not really a big differentiator. There isn't that relationship they used to have with banks in the past where you had your local branch and your local manager that knew you and you had to do whatever business you had there. Nowadays, it's become a lot more, you know, depersonalized. And therefore, that part of the business is unlikely to be profitable in a large scale. And the second thing is that I think the pent-up demand for investment banking, especially in mergers and so on, because of like, you know, Lina Khan at the FTC, she basically kind of stopped most of that stuff during her term. And so when the Trump administration came in and she was, you know, removed, you know, a lot of pent-up bank, you know, merger demand came through that helped us out. And finally, you know, the last year has been quite volatile. We had Liberation Day. We've had whatever we had, you know, because of the last, you know, year with in terms of tariffs and so on. That's been moving markets around. And obviously banks have, you know, made a bit of money on that volatility.
Do you know, it's very interesting you talk about the way that banks have changed and the sort of business that they used to make money from, you know, people like you and I. It's just not there anymore because of the app. Because I was bemoaning the fact, because of a technical issue with one of my accounts, I bemoaned the fact that I didn't have the ability to call up my branch manager and pop in and see her. She was a lovely woman called Kathy. Kathy, if you're listening, how are you? And she was a gentlewoman, you know, and she would sit down and say, "Don't worry, Lindsay, have a cup of tea and I'll fix it." And she would fix it because I'm an idiot when it comes to certain things, believe it or not. And those days are completely gone. So, yes, I suppose technology is changing banking, but is it risky to be reliant on buybacks and the skills of your trading floor?
It is quite risky to be reliant on that. That is, of course, something I think that probably is a more volatile thing. The merger stuff is probably more, you know, dependable if of course the Trump administration continues and we don't have kind of the regulatory hurdles we had in the past. I think that, you know, the what's happened in terms of the banking sector, and that's why we're seeing the stuff happening right now with private credit, that I think is one of the big untold stories out there, or the undercover stories out there, where there's been a lot of issues with the private credit market out, where people are, you know, talking about you know, some of that debt might not be properly valued on people's books. I think is something that we've been better in the normal banking sector. But I think after 2008, people got a bit too nervous and too, you know, overregulated with things like Basel III, and a lot of stuff moved off that the normal big banks into like the private credit market. So yeah, I do think it's interesting. But one thing I do think also is that banking is becoming commoditized. It's not one of the sectors I think that's going to be making in the long term the huge profits, unless they are going to be taking the big swings with things like trading.
Yeah, you were talking about private credit. I've got an interview tomorrow talking about private credit in the developed markets versus the emerging markets, because as you said, the developed market private credit asset class has come under intense scrutiny. I think it was Jamie Dimon, as a high profile a fellow as that, was talking at a conference a week or so ago, and he brought it up. And I saw another screaming headline: is private credit the new subprime? Is it going to bring the market down? So if the war doesn't bring it down, then private credit will. If it's in the headlines, then it's probably not going to. Let's talk about some other numbers now, specifically the tantalizing numbers we had out of Taiwan Semiconductor. This must have interested you very strangely.
Look, I mean, there was an interview with a podcast. I don't know if you ever watched him, Dwarkesh Patel.
No.
Pretty much everything he does on tech is very, very important. He gets the really big interviews. Elon Musk, you know, Jensen Huang, Dario Modi, the guy from Anthropic, etc. He does his big tech interviews. And he had Jensen Huang on, I think, yesterday. And Jensen Huang, the interesting thing was, Dwarkesh as well, he's been pushing the idea that these companies are underinvesting if they believe AI is coming through in the kind of like the, what the market or the predicting market says is coming through, that rate is coming through. You know, Dario Modi was like pushed quite, there's a meme about how he was pushed by Dwarkesh and kept on saying, no, we can't do that. And Dwarkesh was saying, you're just underinvesting if this is what you actually believe. And they did the same thing with Jensen Huang yesterday as well. And the interesting thing is that even Jensen Huang, who seems to be one of the most, as they termed, AI-pulled CEOs out there, in terms of his entire valuation of his company is pretty much dependent on AI, even he doesn't quite invest in the infrastructure and in AI at the rate you would think he would if he really believed the forecast that people have out there for when AGI and ASI and adoption is going to be coming through. And so, yes, with TSMC right now, I mean, this share price, like you said, is up 30%+ just this year alone. Up in the last 5 years, more than doubled. And most of that happened in the last year, basically. And the thing is that these companies, these infrastructure companies, are investing and they are pushing the AI thing, but they are not believing the numbers, I think, or the trends that we are seeing from Anthropic and OpenAI. And therefore, there's still that continuing bottleneck allowing them to sell as much as they want to in the sector going forward.
Yeah, but that's in sharp contradiction to a couple of the discussions that we've had in the past. You said, you know, is it going to be possible to invest as much as they need to invest because the infrastructure simply can't take it? Something will go pop. So it's all very well saying, yes, the demand will be there, but can we actually fulfill that demand because of, I don't know, energy or whatever, as I say, a creaking infrastructure? What would you say to that?
The thing is that the demand is there. And what's happening now is that we can't fulfill the demand. And people, for instance, if you use Claude, you've seen the kind of slowdown that's happened with Claude recently, you know what I mean?
Yes.
Over the last few months. It's because they can't actually service the amount of demand coming through. But this is like a very, very like privileged problem to have. It just shows that the demand out there in the marketplace is gigantic. And what you should be doing when that happens is raising your prices to reduce demand. There needs to be some demand destruction out there. And I think that is what is the next step here. And that just makes these companies even more profitable. I mean, if TSMC and ASML have to increase their prices just to basically make sure that they can match demand and supply, that just means that they're going to have a lot more profits.
At what stage are we in the AI boom or the AI journey? I hate using that word, but I'm going to. The AI journey. How far are we along? I mean, if you could say the same thing by using a comparison with the mobile telephony market, you could have shown Vodafone, seen its share price progression. What would you say we're at? So would you say we're at least a quarter of the way through?
I don't think this is the comparison. I think the comparison you want to put out is like the Industrial Revolution. Is this the point where we have the industrial revolution really taking off the world? I don't think so. I think this is the point at which you are seeing, like, you know, the mills in like Manchester and like, you know, a couple of places in Europe like taking off. It hasn't gone to like, you know, the Americas. It hasn't gone around the world. We haven't really the adoption already in place in some parts of the world. Like I said, I mean, there's the self-driving vehicles. Waymo is already in the US. Have you seen them happen in the Netherlands yet? I have not seen them in South Africa at the moment.
No, definitely not.
But the technology is here. And you can imagine, like, just that alone, if the technology stopped today, the spread, the adoption of what's already out there in the world would be, you know, earth-shattering. And the problem is it's not stopping right there. We saw just last week that the announcement about Mythos and all the stuff that it's doing with regards to, you know, finding zero-day, exploits in software. That is something that we just haven't even considered in the world, because you take that technology and look, it's not smarter than the smartest hacker. The smartest hacker is smarter than this computer. The thing is that the smartest hacker is not going to be able to spend, you know, all this time fighting all these hacks, and there's not many people at that level. What we have right now is a commoditized smart hacker that can look at every piece of software and find all the low-hanging fruit when it comes to exploits and put them together and make like combination exploits, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
No software in the world right now, big software especially, is able to be secure in that environment. That means all banking, all, you know, online transactions, all websites, databases, if you have possible to be hacked, it will be hacked. And that's already something that exists in the world right now. And that won't be towards the end. It will be something actually smarter next year. And in a couple of years' time, maybe it'll be smarter than the smartest hacker. I mean, the future is here, but it's just not evenly distributed. And I think that's what the stage is. We're not at the stage where, for instance, South Africa has electricity. We're at the stage where a few plants in Manchester and in London, in Europe, in England, basically have the steam engine. And that, I think, is where the situation is right now.
So we're right at the beginning. Goodness me, that's quite exciting and also quite scary, because I'll be having conversations that I won't even begin to understand. I'm battling to understand the conversations I have with you at the moment. In the future, I'm going to be blown out of the water. But I'll learn, Viv. I'll adapt. Okay, let's have a look at some real markets now. The dollar rand is 16.42, British pound against the rand 22.22, and the euro rand is 19.34. All barely changed on the day. A euro dollar 1.18.10. It's the dollar after a fairly decent end to the first quarter, i.e. the month of March. It was war inspired. The dollar's on the slide again. British pound 135.30. Gold price 4,808. It's gone very, very quiet recently. It's become a dollar play, Viv. It's not a war play anymore. It's not a central bank play. It's purely a dollar play. Dollar goes down, gold goes up. 4,808. It's up a third of a percent today, or $17 per ounce. Platinum is down another $7.23, and palladium is barely changed at 1587. Let's have a look at oil now, because with the risk on trade on equity markets, that also implies that oil will be down. But in fact, oil is up again. It's up suddenly 3%, just under 3% for Brent crude, $97.70. And West Texas crude is $93.24, which is up 2.1%. I have to look at copper, because copper, the New York version of copper anyway, went to a record high over the last day or so. It's pulled back a little bit, but it's still $6.07 per pound, which is just down very slightly, as I said. Other commodities, not much going on there. The South African 10-year bond yield, 8.48%, and that is 7 basis points higher on the day. US 10-year is, if a screen could work, but it's suddenly frozen. I'll go to the S&P first. 7,052 for the June future, and that is down just a tad, 8 points. US 10-year now, if I can get it. No, it won't do it for me. Bitcoin has had a bit of a run recently, got up to 75,000 earlier on today. It's just above 73,000 at the moment. Right, I've got to look at the JSE, Viv. I don't know if you've been watching it. It hasn't been a busy week for results. In fact, there's been barely any results out this week. So it's been very quiet, especially with the gold price and the platinum price doing what it's doing. And so I've got on the upside. Harmony, 4% better. Boxer, the retailer, up 2.7%. Mr. Price, up 2.6%. And on the downside, Valterra, 5.5% down. Northam's down 3.75%. So it's the white metal producers going down. Otasia is a 3.6% loser. Alphamin down 2.9%, and HCI down 2%. Any other corporate stories that have caught your eye since we last spoke, Viv?
Not really. I mean, I think the big thing I have to say is that, you know, the reason that the market's going to down, it's just like a rule of thumb I have at the moment, is you want to sell at the end of this week. Every week, Friday, basically, the S&P ends up negative. Yeah. I don't know if you noticed that in the start of the war. So basically, we've had a very strong week. We're up about 10% from lows in the market, and we're heading into another weekend tomorrow. And the market, I think, is probably going to set off, and that's probably why we are seeing oil prices higher. And that's probably why we are seeing, you know, the kind of movements we're seeing at the moment in markets. It's just because it's the end of the week. You have 2 days when you can't do much, and you are going to be, you know, quite brave to be, you know, as fully in the market as you were at maybe Monday.
Yeah, very good assessment. Okay, let's enjoy the relatively quiet time, and Viv will speak again next week. Just very quickly, the all share on the JSE today closed down 0.5%, 118,708, and the top 40, 110,833, and that was a 0.6% loser. Viv, thanks very much for your solo efforts this afternoon. Viv Govender is from Rand Swiss in Johannesburg, and that was the 5 o'clock shadow. The views and opinions expressed in these podcasts are those of Lindsay Williams and various contributors and do not reflect the policy, position, or opinion of any other agency, organization, employer, or company associated with strictlybusinesspodcast.com. Assumptions made on the analyses are not reflective of the position of any other entity other than the speaker or the author. And since we are critically thinking human beings, these views are always subject to change, revision, and rethinking at any time. Please do not hold us to them in perpetuity.